slash and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Lock in your uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate, automotive incinerate. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, step down, watch your heel crush, crush, uh-oh. This means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear, tournament, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world.
Bernstein, Leonid, Brezhnev, Lenny, Bush, and Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, mutant, symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, neck, right?
Welcome to this special roundtable for April 13th, 2023. You can thank Matt Bracken for the roundtable today, as well as for the music. It was his choice to use REM, End of the World. I thought it was very fitting given the state of affairs and the situation. So, and the one guy that can't seem to get joined to this thing, we'll get him on in just a second. He's dealing with mic issues, but suffice it to say, the world blew up today. We knew it would. I assumed it would be. I actually assumed it would be Friday night. I figured it'd be last night or Thursday night. But literally, we're seeing the world blow up right now. And I will caution everybody before we get into this. This is our opinion as we see the situation as it is, not how we want it to be or how we think it should be. This is how we see it right now. And things could change drastically in 24 hours. And if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would say that you could look for this to escalate very, very quickly over the next 7 to 10 days, especially given the fact that these tensions have been stoked and brewing by the Israelis for well over 2 months. So and you've all heard me say this, it bears repeating. This is the event horizon. This is the start. The attacks here in the country were the start of the attacks here. This is the start of the attacks in the Middle East. And they are only going to escalate. There he is, Mr. Bracken. Sound like Mr. Anderson.
So...
I'm glad you could make it, Matt. You missed the music, by the way. Because
StreamYard, Zoom, and Skype, they got to sit down at a table someday and say, you know what?
let's not just keep shitting on each other. I mean, you got to restart your computer because, like, I was on Zoom last week or something.
Well, remember, it's a Windows box. So you have to restart, face the north, lift your right leg, yell Buttafuoco 10 times, fart, and then your mic will start working.
It's crazy.
It's a Windows box. So the current situation, the world's blown up. Anybody can pick a place to start, and let's just start there because there's so much going on. Who wants to start?
Yeah, the Babylonians. No, it's... It's nothing new. Yeah, this one.
Jordan, Matt called. I'm gonna let Matt pick this one up. But Jordan started launching rockets at Israel last night, I think, to burn up their magazines. And earlier today, Matt said the same thing. These slow ass drones are just flying over to empty the magazines, and then I think the hypersonic Russian missiles are coming.
The nice thing about the drones is that we're not expending pilots with them. In World War II, we had these biplane torpedo bombers, and their whole function was to divert the attention of the Japanese anti-aircraft guns down to low level so that the Hellcats and the dive bombers could come in. And in that case, I mean, people say, oh, those Japanese had their kamikazes. If your mission is like 80% mortality rate every time you take off from the carrier, that's pretty close to kamikaze. So at least these drones don't have humans on them.
There is that.
Very true. And I expect to happen over the next 24 to 48 hours is there'll be this attack tonight, more attacks tomorrow, and then Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, then we'll start seeing the big stuff coming in. I don't think it'll be right away because Iran's got factories making drones right now for Russia. So I imagine they have a pretty good stockpile they're going to go through before hypersonics.
Yeah, you've seen those things that look like, the college skulls, the rowing boats. They have trailers that have 12 of them on a trailer. That's what the Iranians have for these drones. These aren't predator drones, and they're not like quad rotors. They're 15 to 20 foot wingspan, composite fiberglass foam. Very hard on radar, but they're stacked up like 20 of them. So they go off like a Katyusha, one after the other, and the whole thing's on the trailer, so it's very highly mobile. I just lost my microphone. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, it fell off of your head there. So it's a multiple launch drone system then.
Yeah, it's like a truck trailer combination, and they have them in a cassette. So these are like a B-2 bomber looking fiberglass thing.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I saw those
So this thing goes out into the desert. You got a truck driver and 8 or 10 of these like 20-foot wingspan drones with range from Iran to Israel. And I mean they messed up Saudi oil fields with these things 2 or 3 years ago.
It's a smart MLRS.
It's everything's smart now.
Yeah. Well, I'm yeah.
everything is smart now. So a hundred pound payload delivered into the window is much better than 100 pound payload with a circular error probability of 100 meters. Well, now they can all fly into a window. So it changes the game completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
Absolutely.
I think the bigger question is, Given the fact that they've got so many munitions, what time frame do you give the Israelis before they run out of Iron Dome?
It's debatable if Iron Dome's a real thing or a propaganda thing. You know, the Iron Dome is like as counterposed to drain pipe Estes rockets fired from Gaza. That have like a 5% success rate. So the Israelis can claim a 95% Iron Dome success rate against, stovepipe, drainpipe, Estes rockets. But if the real things are coming in from Iran, and when I say the real thing, they're like composite foam, very low radar signature, quiet engine. Remember, Russia used these. You know, when Russia was running out of stuff 2 years ago, they flew transport planes down to Iran and loaded them up. And that kept Russia going offensively. And then Russia, under license, started building these things and improving them. But we're talking a niche that's, you know, right in the middle between, you know, your quad rotor that's dropping a grenade, right? And your Predator Global Hawk that's like way up there. These are smart munitions carrying a couple hundred, you know, 100 kilos, couple hundred kilos, but straight to a window. And they can do things we saw in the Ukraine war. So everything that we're seeing tonight with Iran, we have to put it in the context of what we know has happened in the Iran war. I mean, the Ukraine war. These same Shahad type drones, these like B-2 bomber foam drones, they can fly towards Kiev and then circle all over the place for like hours and then do a time on target attack from all different directions. So we're in.
So they'll leave them loitering up there to confuse radar, or just to coordinate.
To confuse radar and to say, "Come on, shoot a $3 million Patriot at me."
Oh yeah.
I cost 20,000. It's the same thing with the Houthis. It's a math problem that you can't win firing $1 million, you know, anti-air missiles at $50,000 fiberglass drones.
Just a casual observation, but I love the fact that the Tuscan Raiders basically are taking on the U.S. Navy and winning.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's a paradigm shift. You know, there's been so many. It's you know, TNT, machine guns, all of these things. You know, old generals with old tactics go up against new weapons, and they're not adaptable enough. And sort of like Spanish Civil War was very, very useful for all of the Axis powers to tweak, like, you know, dive bomb tactics, things like that. You know, the Spanish Civil War, for example. I mean, everybody knows about the Stuka bombers being used, but people don't realize the Spanish Civil War was even enabled because of the first airlift in human history, where the Ford trimotors shuttled Franco's armies from North Africa to Spain, just flying thousands and thousands of people in. It's like, that's not very glamorous. It's like, you know, it's like a military airlift command, whatever they call it now. Not very glamorous, but it's very important. So the Spanish Civil War was like developing all of the tactics for World War II, and Ukraine, and now the Houthis are developing the tactics for World War, whatever we're going to call this war. But, you know, these 20-foot wingspan, and I mean 8 feet to 30 feet, right there, because there's just, look up, just Google Iranian drones. Like, these are the guys that invented chess, all right? Persians are not stupid. Persians are not Saudis.
Read your Xenophon.
Yeah, they may have, they may go through like a bad period of leadership, like the Russians under the Bolsheviks from 1917 to 1991. They may be hampered by a deleterious ideology, but Persians are not stupid. Persians can make engineers. Persians know calculus. You know, they know electrical engineering.
Here's your drone, Matt. It's called a Mohajer 6. And it is exactly what you described. There's a couple of guys standing next to it. Let's see if I can get the, it's on defensepost.com. Let me reach over. And can I pull this up, Colonel?
Go for it.
Let's share screen. I'm pretty sure this is what you're talking about.
Yes, but there... But you have to understand, that's like saying, here's the American airplane and showing a picture of an F-14. You have to show like 30 of these from like Raven size to Predator size. They've got classes of these.
Yeah, no, I understand completely what you're saying. I saw some of the program at Huachuca. Let's see here if it will expand to show the full article. This is from 2018. So basically, these have been in production for years now.
And that's not an attack drone. That's not a disposable attack drone. That's a very slick and finished surveillance drone with an ISR suite under its nose.
Yeah, right? That white bubble under the nose there. That's exactly what that is.
And you can see that the wing attaches by bolts on. So that whole thing you can probably fit 40 of them into a 20-foot cargo container to ship to Yemen, right? With the wings, just flip the wings around. So, But what I was talking about are these things that look that are a wing. They look like a B-2 bomber. These things are just like a skin of fiberglass over a styrofoam body with 100 kilos of TNT in the nose. And that's what can fly all around Kiev all night, soaking up $1 million Predator or Patriot missiles. And then finally, the survivors coordinate a time on target attack. Or are they just flying around to confuse the Patriots while, a Kinjal comes in? We're like World War I tacticians who are familiar with 16-inch guns and 40 millimeter AA, and we're trying to come to grips with generations ahead.
So I found what you're looking for. I'm pretty sure here in Spanish. For the first time in history, Iran launches an attack on Israel using drones, pero en español. There's your baby. The offensive llega tras the Ayatollah.
Yep, that looks right. That looks exactly right. And the piece we're not talking about, which we should discuss, is remember, Mossad's probably one of the most adept intelligence services on the planet. Yeah. And there's a fair bet that they've probably got some EW working right now. Sorry, electronic warfare working right now. And they're probably sniffing for the frequencies those drones are coming in on. But the point that you're making, Matt,
what frequency are they coming in on? There's Russian, American, and Chinese GPS now. There's no frequency they're coming in on.
Well, you still jam them.
They may get guidance in the middle in a burst, but it's not like they're home on jam. It's not something you can jam, because they can just fly for an hour and then get a 1 second burst that redirects them.
So you're saying that's that correct. These are all autonomous. They're not being coordinated. Yeah,
they can use burst transmission. So here's the counter to that, Matt. This is my first time on your show, Colonel. I was SIGINT electronic warfare. You get a drone like this up there like that. We had a system called Tilki, and it's been replaced since then. I can't go into those because NDAs, blah, blah, blah. But they can, in fact, fire what amounts to an EMP at that drone if they can get some sort of a Tekkant signature from it. If you can pick up a Tekkant signature from that drone, you can tune the burst to that, and you can fry its electronics.
Okay. Two things. Number one, that trailer that I've never seen where they're flying 90 degrees off of like a truck trailer. Mm-hmm. I'm just showing you that they have such a full spectrum. What I was describing looks like a 20-foot wingspan B-2 bomber, okay, a wing plane, where they're stacked one over the other, like eight high, to launch like a Katyusha. So what I'm saying is they have like such a spectrum of these that it's impossible to just go on Fox and say, oh, these Iranian drones, we know about them, they're crap. The other thing is going into in 1940, the equivalent of what you just said about we have this SIGINT is our battleships have 20 millimeter to 90 millimeter anti-aircraft guns. No airplane can get within 5 miles. It will be shot down. And And we knew that was all out the window, especially when the two British battleships leaving Singapore were sunk. They were bristling with AA. They were confident no airplane could get near them. We're at that kind of a paradigm shift. And we and people that have been really watching the Ukraine war for like these kind of things, when Russia was running out of munitions, they literally got airplane loads of these things from Iran and started building them under license. The ones that are like stacked 8 or 10 high that fire like Katyushas. But
I found it's called the Shahed 136. I just found a picture.
Yeah, and it sounds like a stupid weapon. It sounds like a stupid weapon, but if three of these trailers fire 30 of them at Kiev, for example, and they're flying all around like very randomly, but they get a burst transmission that is not jammable, like 2 seconds, and now they're on a whole new mission. And now they've gone from fly randomly over Kiev to time on target attack. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
My point, Matt, was that the Israelis. So the one thing that I don't want to discount here, though, is that because I agree with what you're saying, but the one thing I don't want to discount is that the U.S., Britain, and the Israelis have spent a tremendous amount of resources to counter the drones, especially in Ukraine. So
it's the other 1940. I don't want to. I'm not sure I agree with that. Our 40 millimeter. Our 40 millimeter, the Swedish Bofors has gone boom, 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 boom. No airplane can get within 5 miles of a battleship.
Hey, I would love to fire that weapon, just so you know. That would be fun.
But I
don't want to fire it right now, just so you know.
We're before the paradigm shift. Ukraine is the Spanish Civil War, where we're testing out Stukas and air mobility transport planes to move divisions of men. We may be at the beginning stage, or maybe this is just a feint, or maybe this is just another aspect of this is we're all just talking like this is the opening first inning of World War III. You have to look at everything from the audience. Who is the audience? Is the audience the domestic Iranian audience, and the politicians in Iran are saying, we're going to get overthrown if we don't give them something where we attack Israel. We don't want to go to war with America plus Israel, but we have to show them that we were really fighting. So you have to always look at things in terms of what's the audience for the action? You know, what's the prime motivation for the audience for this action? Is it just a diversion for hypersonics to come in? Is it just... We have to ameliorate the domestic Iranian audience, which is so mad. Look, the Israelis bombed a diplomatic outpost, a consulate in Syria, right? Our side will all say, well, screw you. You bombed in Argentina. You bombed, you know, you look at the, you took over our embassy in 1980. Screw you. And you're getting all high and mighty about taking out an embassy. Who cares? But the Iranians have not been hearing that for 40 years. So to the Iranians, what happened in Damascus was like Colin Powell and General Westmoreland being massacred at a diplomatic protected embassy, totally outside of the bounds. I get it. The way we look at it is not the same way that they look at it. But you have to look at things through the binocular lens of your enemy. And if your enemy's been brainwashed for 50 years in one way, that's the only message they've heard. The Israelis using American bombs, right? Made in USA, boom, killed our top generals. We say, oh, they're terrorist generals. They're scum like Soleimani. They should just, the Iranians should, you know, be glad we killed the guy because he's a terrorist. To the Iranians, that's the head of the Iranian guard. He's like a super general, great patriot. And the Israelis did that in Syria using made in USA bombs to drag America into the war on Israel's side. That's how a lot of the world sees this, trying to be like down the middle. A lot of the world is thinking, Israel did that in Damascus, attacking a diplomatically protected, you know, consulate outpost to drag America into the war. So when we go to World War III, it's not going to be Israel versus Islam. It's going to be Israel plus America versus Islam. And, you know, that's the high stakes we're playing for right now. Sorry for the rant, but, you know, I can't help it.
Yeah, Matt, you touched on a point there that I encountered a lot when I was a liaison officer and at G5, 8th Army Civil Affairs. I had to, every time we got new officers in for whatever event, for RSO and I or NEOS or whatever, just all the exercises that the military does, I always had to bring those officers into a room and close the door and say, okay, look, I know I'm just an NCO and I know you're a colonel, but you have to listen to me. These foreign officers do not think like you. They do not want to think like you. They cannot think like you, and they are not going to understand the way that you think. So take your time when you talk to these people. Don't lose your mind.
100%. And
understand they have their viewpoint, their perspective, their motives, and their own national pride. I had to give that briefing at least a dozen times.
If you don't get into the binoculars, you know, it's like looking at the binoculars backwards or forwards.
Yeah.
You have to always strive to look through your adversaries, not just enemies, you know, but your adversaries' binoculars. If you don't look through your adversaries' binoculars, you're a fool. You're saying, yes, I am so dominant. I am so in charge of the world. All of these Houthis, Hottentots, third world, you know, Untermenschen, who gives a damn what they think? If you think like that, then you're going to wind up like what's the British general in Sudan, you know, Charlton Heston. I mean,
which British general?
No, Sudan? I mean, World War II? What's the move? No, no.
Montgomery. You're talking about
Montgomery. No, no. The 1880s, 1890s.
Way before that.
Yeah. Where we got machine guns. we're modern. They're on horses. They believe in this Allah guy. What's the name of it? He was like the can't believe I can't think of this great Charlton Heston movie, but it's the name of the general. The movie is the name of the general.
We're not Ben-Hur, Lawrence of Arabia.
No. It's like, this is the British army. We're going to go down there and we're going to spank the damn Muslim Sudanese that believe in this, in the Mahdi. What's his name? General. I'm sorry. I gotta Google it.
While you're fishing for the name, Matt, I got a good story related to exactly what you're talking about. We were negotiating a SOFA agreement. I'm in there as a translator and LNO for this colonel out of 522 in Hawaii. And the foreign officer, as we're talking about what we're going to do with moving civilian populations out of the war areas, out of the AO, the foreign officer says, well, I'll just roll my tanks over. And the American officer I'm translating for loses his mind. Oh, my God, you can't do that. I had to pull him out of the room for a minute and say, sir, he's negotiating. He's not going to roll his tanks over people. He wants to know where you want the people to go so that he can get his tanks to the front areas. It was how this foreign officer negotiated. I'll just kill everything in my path. So what's right. Your counter to that?
Exactly. And so the movie I'm thinking of is called, everybody should watch, is called Khartoum.
Oh, yeah.
In Sudan, I'm just reading off of IMDb. In the Sudan, 1844 to 1885, Egyptian forces led by Egyptians, like it's like the English, right? Egyptian forces led by British General Charles Chinese Gordon, Charlton Heston, defend Khartoum against an invading Muslim army led by a religious fanatic, Muhammad Ahmed El Mahdi. Well, General Gordon got his head cut off at the end in this movie.
It's and like, El Mahdi remains a superhero to the Muslims to this
right. day. Right. And he's like, it's like saying Messiah. He's like, you know, reincarnated. So at the height of the British Raj in India, the, you know, the sun never sets in the British Empire. we're going to go down to Sudan and teach these and teach these westernized Oriental gentlemen a lesson because we got the machine guns and so forth. But they couldn't do it. It was like it was like a Kabul too far, and you know, General Gordon gets decapitated, and the English are run out of there. So just thinking that we have like the most glorious military in the history of the world is not going to be enough when you're up against a, if not an alliance, certainly a partnership of Russia, China, and Iran. I mean, because as soon as we go into a kinetic war against Iran, this is already very clear, Russia and China are going to put the pressure on in their theaters so that we can't just say every American from every base from Georgia to, you know, Djibouti is now going to be pushed towards this war with Iran. At that point, Russia and China are going to start like Russia will mobilize towards the Baltics. Not that they want to attack the Baltics, but just to say, you better leave something because, you know, we could roll through the Baltics. China will start moving amphibious forces towards Taiwan. Not that they are necessarily ready to attack Taiwan, but it's a part of an agreement that they've made so that Iran won't have to face, you know, America alone, America plus Israel alone, because we just don't have the forces to take on. We couldn't do Desert Storm today.
No.
You know, one country, 6 months to move to Saudi Arabia. We couldn't do that today.
No, we don't have the logistics to do it or the strategic reserves or the production.
And part of what just happened yesterday is Iran captured a ship with Israeli links. So
off the coast of the UAE, I was just about to bring that up. The US,
everybody's got Google.
MSC Ares.
Yeah, yep. Everybody has Google. So even the Houthis can Google through all the layers of ownership because ships are extremely complicated, you know, between all of these holding companies and, you know, national flag registries, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you have to peel through all these layers and find out that ship is one quarter owned by Israelis. Fair game.
Yeah, that's you enough know. For them.
Right. So
there's another thing that's going on right now. The in Israel, the kibbutzim are surrounding a bunch of Palestinian villages and starting to attack those. So the settlers.
In what part of Israel is this?
So the occupied areas of the like, contested areas of Palestine like, / Israel.
You mean West Bank or like
in the West Bank?
It's got to be West Bank. I would imagine it's West Bank. This is the, you know how the Israelis have been setting up pop-up villages, basically, and it's mostly the kibbutzim, the Israeli settlers, the Jewish settlers that have been doing it, and a lot of them tend to be foreigners, well non-Israelis yeah. specifically. Those are surrounding, where did the article go? Surrounding Palestinian villages and attacking them.
Yeah. And this goes back to like
yeah, you know, occupied West Bank.
This goes back 100 years. And anybody that says like you know, only the Muslim Palestinians have bloody hands, or you know, it's come on, give me a break.
This goes back 3,000 years. Let's be real.
Menachem Begin but if a word for Americans to really key in on is the word Amalek. Okay.
Oh, yep.
Amalek, because this is like Old Testament Bible, and my reading of it is it boils down to God really loves Israelis, chosen people, and their enemy was so evil and bad that the Israelis were forced to kill them down to men, women, children, babies, goats, dogs, cats, trees, scorched earth. Because the Amaleks were so bad that it's like after October 7th, we're on Amalek rules. And there were lots of politicians that like sideways slip out the word Amalek. What they're talking about is scorched earth nobody's left alive in Gaza unless they're put on an American ship to go to America, like after Beirut. But there won't be a Palestinian left in Gaza. That's Amalek rules. And that is like coming out of a lot of, ever since October 7th. And earlier in the show, I heard, but Mossad's got such great intel on these drones coming in. Mossad had cameras on every inch of that border. Mossad had spies all over Gaza. If you telling me they had no clue that October 7th was going to happen, I'm not buying it.
I think we all agree, Matt, that the Mossad not only knew about it, they allowed it to happen.
They allowed it to happen because to get to Amalek rules, you have to have a really bad atrocity. And
do you remember when North Koreans and the South Koreans got into it in the North China Sea in 2001? Two naval vessels opened fire on each other?
Just vaguely.
I was on the watch that night. And that happened.
On the North Korean ship or the South Korean ship? Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
So anyway.
No judgment. No judgment.
I was doing that SIGINT thing. I had cans on and I was flipping through frequencies. Okay. We found the firefight that was going on. We reported it up the chain. What was reported to the media by our higher ups? Well, it went to our higher ups. Then it went to National Security Council because this is a critical event. North Korea and South Korea exchanging gunfire is a critical event. It goes in the Criticom program for reporting. And it went to the National Security Council, president gets briefed, blah, blah, blah. But when it gets reported to the media, it's an entirely different story. What was reported through the media had nothing to do at all with the actual intelligence reporting. We're like, what the hell? Our bosses are like, nope, just shut up. Just let them do what they're doing. And we were never told why it was that way. There was never a correction issued, nothing. What was issued in the media was not what happened on the water that night. So there's a possibility of that going on here as well.
Yeah.
There's a very high possibility of that.
One of my blood uncles, actual literal uncle, was the commanding officer of the Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Nice.
The other ship had a Commodore on board. So he was just a CO where there was a squadron commander on board. Why? For two destroyers. We were chest bumping North Vietnam while covering for patrol boats dropping off saboteurs, okay? Including SEALs or Vietnamese trained SEALs to do sabotage raids. And we were coming up to their territorial waters, chest bumping as cover for patrol boats going in with saboteurs. And the way that was actually reported in history, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, was nothing like what my uncle reported. And after that incident, he was buried in the Pentagon, like below the Pentagon, with a typewriter and no phone for the rest of his career.
Chained to a desk and told to shut up. Yeah.
Well, it was just like, because the official story is unprovoked attack against American destroyers, which never happened, right? But it had already been determined that we need a casus belli for Vietnam, and you're it.
So I know every SEAL knows every other SEAL by name and you're all best buddies. Do you happen to know a SEAL that went by Mongo, Petty Officer Brockman?
No, I mean, there could have been several Mongos, but I mean, my era of Mongo would have been like probably a generation before his.
This was late 80s, early 90s. Anyway, he was a class leader. He was our class leader at a school. And while we were in between cycles, he gave us a whole spiel on be prepared for disappointment because you're going to see things that you can't explain. We had a guy in Sudan in our sights. We called back to get the shot, and the shot got denied at the White House level. This is 1995. I'm having this conversation with Petty Officer Brockman. He passed in 2011, by the way. The guy had a heart attack. He was a great guy, just a fantastic dude. Anyway, he says, we had this guy in the sights. He was a high-level financier for the terrorist outfits. We had him in Sudan, and they told us not to take the shot. They told us to leave off, and it was some guy named Bin Laden.
Sure.
That's the first time I heard that name in 1995. Yeah.
And at the beginning of the Afghanistan thing, or early in the Afghanistan thing, we had eyes on him where, like, there's the SUV convoy heading west, and there's, like, well, one guy seems to be like a foot taller than anybody else, and they're all out like taking a piss. And it was like, no, you can't take the shot because we need to like spend at least 10 hours at the Pentagon talking about it.
And yeah, because he's on the payroll. That's why they didn't shoot his ass.
Minutes after that, the media suddenly started reporting that we were able to intercept Bin Laden's satellite cell phone communications, and that network went dark. I remember that incident.
We're like mushrooms kept in the dark and fed shit.
Even top tier.
Absolutely. Fuck yeah. He was so close. Right, we had him in our sights. He was right there. We had him, but we had to get coordination so we couldn't shoot him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yep.
Well, how about this? How about the commanding officer of a Arleigh Burke destroyer, which is the size of a World War II cruiser for comparison. And in terms of like number of ships, an Arleigh Burke destroyer should be called a cruiser if we're using the same terminology, right? He's seen holding a rifle with the scope backwards.
Yeah.
So not only did he not know, the gunner's mate that put the scope on the rifle didn't know.
Yeah.
And the public affairs officer didn't know. And the man with his hand on his shoulder didn't know. And these are the guys that are going to stop swarms of hypersonic Kinjal missiles. Yeah. We are being set up for such a defeat.
We have channels
by design,
of competition rifle shooting on TV now. So everybody knows what it's supposed to look like, which makes it even more embarrassing. He's up there with his chicken wing. Because everybody watches that stuff now. So they looked at that and they're like, what a fucking loser, man.
So that means
remember, we've got controlled assets all over Washington D.C.
Yes.
That are in China's pocket. You don't think this was all coordinated? What? I mean, fucking Austin comes out this week and says there's no signs of genocide in Gaza. Get the fuck out of here!
But down to the level, down to the level of a U.S. Navy ship, right? Front line, forward edge of the battle area, tip of the spear, Arleigh Burke. The gunner's mate, the chief in charge of the ordnance locker, the armory, didn't know. I should at least Google how this thing goes on, because a low-powered variable optic has a big end and a small end. And if all you did was watch Rambo-type movies, you'd think the big end goes in the front, right? So if you're never going to fire the thing, so the transsexual, pink-headed, you know, pink-haired, pierced head of the armory department probably hates guns, never checked, never looked through it, handed it to the guy for a photo op. The cover is down. The back lens cover is down.
The
lens cap. So these guys never checked. None of them knew. But we're supposed to assume that they're all squared away to take on swarms of drones and hypersonic missiles. We are set up for an absolute defeat.
What are the odds that you got a bigger case of the ass than I do about it? Just crack me
up. What are the odds that there's one last competent boat chief on there who put that weapon together for that captain and handed it to him, knowing full well that it was jacked
zero,
up 16?
Zero chance. Zero chance.
Well, that's my mind too, because if you look where the hand grip is and the scope is upside down and backwards, I mean, the whole thing's a shit show. So,
yeah, because I absolutely would have done that to a shitbag officer.
Yeah, but this is like from seamen to captain, it's Shaniqua. Seaman Shaniqua, Chief Shaniqua. And if anybody says, wait a minute, this is not both of our ships that this is, we're going back a few years, but in both of the ships that were rammed by tankers, which is like if you're in the Bonneville Salt Flats and you've got a Ferrari and somehow you have a collision with a tractor trailer. I think that the Ferrari is probably going to be more at fault because it's got way more capability than a tractor trailer. So if you have two Ferraris hit by tractor trailers, there's a real problem with whoever's driving the Ferrari. And the Ferraris being Arleigh Burke destroyers in like off of Korea or Japan. The captains go to bed every night saying, please let nothing happen on my watch. Just please let me get to my end of this tour, get to my retirement. They know that they cannot say that the people on the bridge are totally incompetent. I mean, it's no different than the fourth grade teacher that is getting children that can't read, don't know ABCs, but they have to pass them to fifth grade. A few years later, they have theoretically a high school degree. They go to work, they go to Boeing for their interview. Hello, Shaniqua, you have a high school degree, you're hired. But Shaniqua doesn't know millimeters from inches. She's drilling holes all over the wing. But nobody can say it. Nobody can say it. Nobody can say it. They'd rather have a World War III defeat than say the truth.
In 2007, I worked at a high-end law firm in Los Angeles. We were getting associate attorneys out of Brown, Berkeley, Stanford that could not write a short declarative sentence in 2007. So I can't even imagine what it's like today.
Yeah, in the USSR, the Soviet Union, they had multiple track education. We're not saying that kids that can't do calculus aren't good comrades, but we're putting them on the tractor driver factory worker track. And the sharp kids are going to take calculus and they're going to, you know, go become engineers. We can't do that anymore. In that sense, we are more handicapping ourselves than the Soviets were. That's why Boeing is making bad planes, because if you don't know inches from millimeters, how can you drill the row of holes? But nobody can say you're fired because you'd be racist for saying you drilled the holes in the wrong line.
I hear people say we could have never, we never went to the moon. I think it is the people who could do that math no longer exist. There's nobody who could do that math anymore.
With a slide rule.
And a slide rule.
Let's shift off this for a second, because I think the other thing that folks need to think through is, let's say things escalate overseas, which we know they're going to. Question yes. is, can we expect, because, and by the way, I'm asking a couple questions I got, so let me just throw it out there. The question really is can we expect to see something here domestically from either Iranians or from other groups affiliated with the Iranians, given this kickoff?
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%.
What flavor of episode would you envision, Matt? Because I can't see anything past some really nasty.
The barge is getting cut. The barge is getting cut loose.
Oh, I think it's more than that, Matt. By the way, welcome.
I don't think that's related. I don't think the barges are related to this.
Oh, it all is. All of it is.
But so everybody's familiar with Carver, the mission attack, an acronym. Add a D to it for deniable. If you do an attack and there's a missile trail going back to your home country, it's pretty non-deniable. But if something hits a bridge, maybe it was just a natural consequence, or maybe somebody in a John boat with bolt cutters did it. Deniable.
Oh, yeah. plausible deniability is one of the biggest weapons in the toolbox in what we're seeing now.
Wait a second.
The death of a thousand cuts. Death of a thousand cuts.
Thanks, Matt. That's where I was going. And by the way, welcome, Captain Cashel. I appreciate you jumping on, bud. I know you're busy, so I appreciate you jumping on.
You bet. And thanks, Colonel Murray, everybody else for having me on. And I think that the question was brought up, will there be attacks on U.S. soil or violence on U.S. soil? I don't know if you want me to dive on that or if I'm stealing your thunder,
go
but
for it.
I do have a opinion on this.
Yep, go for it.
All right, so I wrote a list of 10 predictions for 2024. Last year, I hit 6 out of 10 predictions dead on, and I had partial hits on 2 others, and I only missed on 2. This year, I've already hit 4 direct. This is going to be number 5, which I said that violence or war will be the COVID of 2024. So I just posted on Truth Social. It's a pretty sad state of affairs in our country. Whenever something goes boom on the other side of the world, and we immediately start thinking about how is this intended to sabotage our next election. So I think the answer is starting to manifest itself in little drips, like in Arizona this week with the Supreme Court rolling that grenade into the room, which is a live political issue. And there is your cover for why there's so many ballots cast in Arizona this year, because it's going to take more than 2 million votes if they're going to steal Arizona in 2024. And now you've got the impetus for that, which is angry women. So I would say that it's very possible that these cartels and foreign nodes that are in the United States that came across our southern border could potentially activate. And what I wrote in my predictions thread was that a situation like that is designed to cause fear and to disrupt the standard elections process. Nobody can go outside. We have to ballot harvest. Nobody's safe going out. And that would, again, provide cover for an atypical election result. And by atypical, war has not actually helped incumbent presidents since arguably World War II. But even before then, you know, part of FDR's thing was getting out of the Great Depression. War hasn't really helped an incumbent president since Lincoln in the Civil War. So war is typically a loser, but this is just going to muddy the waters and create the leash for them to do whatever they want with the elections.
And this aligns with what you were saying, Matt, a couple of weeks ago when you were talking about them using some kind of a catalyst for domestic violence to interdict the elections.
And there doesn't this doesn't have to be at the level we tend to think, like in an organized military structure, and then transpose that into like a terrorist meta structure, like we're waiting for the secret word go code. There's also just a psychological contagion effect. When people start seeing trains derailing and oil chemical plants burning, they're going to say, well, I guess it's my turn. I know where there's like a something I can derail. And it's so simple. I mean, 10,000, 100,000 places in this country, railroad tracks are switched by little things that can be, I don't even want to say, but I mean, it's just, you can walk out behind your house and cause a derailing. And you don't have to be like part of Al-Qaeda, card-carrying ISIS, Hezbollah. You can just say, I see my brothers are now acting, so it's my turn to act. Set forest fires, whatever.
Yeah.
That's the threat that we were talking about. So the professionals aren't going to do anything that is not going to be a lever for something else. All those other free radicals that are running around, yeah, they totally would buy those train derailers off of Amazon and start messing with infrastructure. But those are small... those are small level disasters that are responsive by the local utility. I mean, they would have to do a lot of those in mass to cause a significant long-term disruption, but that's definitely a threat. And regionally, you know, across the country, that's going to be a real headache. The ones that I'm worried about are the ones that are planned, targeted, and have a purpose. And remember, I mean, none of us ever have committed violence just because we were in a bad mood. In fact, I don't think any of us have ever pulled the trigger while we were angry. They operate under the same doctrine that we do. So the big things that they're going after are going to soften or enable something else to be easier or accessible. Those are the threats that I'm concerned about. Not whether Snuffy shoots up a fucking.
I don't deny that. What I'm saying is it's going to be a full spectrum. There's going to be planned Chinese grid attack, say, or cyber attack, all the way down to just somebody saying, I am a devoted follower of Allah, and I know that I can just walk out my backyard and shoot into a mall.
Yeah, and I think
it'll be the full spectrum. Full spectrum.
Agree, and I think Captain Kessel's point was spot on, because in my mind, all of this is tied together and coordinated as it relates to the election. And you said before, Matt, which I agree with, that it only takes a little bit of violence in a couple of different cities, and those cities go full stop because people are going to be afraid to go outside. They're going to maximize the fear. Yep. The question I have for Captain Kessel, since you brought it up, which is a good segue, do you think we're going to get to the November election, or do you think it's going to be too much domestic turmoil to have an election?
So I do think that there will be something resembling an election in the worst case. I'm not saying, I mean, I already refer to the 2020 and 22 elections as a quasi election. It wasn't really the real thing. So there will be something where there are electoral votes certified from states, whether they're cast by legislatures or whether it's just some sloppy absentee heavy election. The reason I say that is even in 1864, there was an election. Now, a number of states that we have today, like the Confederacy, wasn't allowed to vote in those elections, except for states that had already been taken over by the Union. So there has to be some sense of normalcy, because everything has to be as believable as possible, which is why you have as many red states as could be given to Trump in 2020. I think Alaska was on the docket to go to Biden in the event that he needed three electoral votes, and once it became obvious, then it went to Trump. But in that case, you know, we have Republican governors in certain states. I think that if it were possible, you would see Republican presidents out there if they were controlled, because you need both parties in power strategically located to be able to continue this farce that Americans have an accurate represented voice in our elections. So if Donald Trump were not on the political scene, I think you could have already set your clock to a Republican being president in 2024. Unfortunately, there's so many tens of millions of Trump only Republican voters now. I would be surprised if Nikki Haley were the nominee, if she could even get 45 or 50 million votes. So it's a real rat's nest. They don't really have anything to do but go for broke. And you'll see anything out there. I think that you've seen it with Pennsylvania running out for automatic voter registration. A huge scam. The voter registration scam is the foundation of the election fraud scam. 18 out of 20 states with automatic voter registration in 2020 went to Biden, 243 electoral votes to 9. Arizona doesn't technically have it, but it kind of does. It's got automatic registration. It's got registration through the DMV. It's not automatic, but it's
Michigan really has that too.
It's amped up the number of voter registrations in Arizona at a magnificent magnificent level that you've never seen before here since they put it in. So we absolutely are going to see the election come down to six states. And I wouldn't be surprised if one plan would be to let Trump win Arizona and Georgia and get those two states off of the schneid, and then make sure he can't take Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and see a scenario like that. Because they had a lot of buffer built in 2020, anticipating court challenges. The courts are rock solid on not allowing any overturned results for major elections. So this is not to be a pessimist. I truly don't know what to expect in 2024, other than they will do everything they can to try to keep the illusion of reality there and rig the system as much as possible. But a state that's got automatic voter registration, mail-in ballots, and ballot harvesting, that's about a perfect recipe for a blue state.
I don't disagree with that. But I will say I'll disagree with you on the sense that I don't think we're getting to the 24 election, because I think this is going to get out of control really, really quickly, especially as it escalates. And it's going to escalate probably in the next less than 30 days.
Hey, Seth, yeah, I got a question for you as far as the motor voter law. So we've had, I'm a precinct committeeman and a legislative district vice chair, and we've had a real problem with registered Republicans just being switched to PND, or what we would call party not declared. So they're taking away their voter registration. And if they go to renew their license, that's what's driving a lot of this. It'll, if they don't fill out the bottom of it, because they go, I'm already registered to vote, I don't need to fill out the bottom of this motor voter thing, it's automatically been dropping people from their party. So if you, so we've been going and doing a lot of canvassing, a lot of research, and a lot of notifications, but you know, not everybody's paying attention. And then the other part of that is the provisional voters that are coming in. I think the last count was 260,000 of them. They didn't even reconcile those from the last election, so I don't have high hopes that they're going to be vetting any of these walk-ins. What are your thoughts on that, and what's your analysis on that predicting?
The entire election system is a catch-22. So if we don't early vote, and we don't mail vote, and we don't ballot harvest, then what that means is that the other side has been doing it for 28 days, 35, 42, however many days it is. Pennsylvania is like 50 days where there's early voting, mail voting, ballot harvesting. So to do it right, which the right way to do it is to vote on election day in person as late in the day as possible. I realize that's not feasible for everyone. And therein lies the catch-22. So first off, with the voter registration problem, that is not exclusive to Arizona. It's all over states that have party registration, where people are dying and then coming up registered as Democrats. Republicans are being unregistered and sent to a non-party. Arizona, of course, is about one-third D, one-third R, and one-third other. Actually, it's R plus six right now. So there's been a significant Republican Party registration trend, a big Dem drop-off. All 15 counties in Arizona have a Republican Party trend. So, of course, you need a scam like the abortion issue to try to create the narrative to why an R plus six, and probably by the time the election rolls around, R plus eight state would go blue. Same thing in Nevada, big time Republican Party trend. It's a really difficult issue to get around, because we've been backed into this corner incrementally. Early voting started in the 80s, big time mail voting in the late 90s, 2000. Ballot harvesting in California 10 years ago, and automatic voter registration is less than 10 years old. So we have a system of systems that exists, and it starts out with census fraud, it goes to voter registration fraud, it goes to mail ballot request fraud. Some states sidestep that entirely by just blasting mail ballots to the entire roll.
So the short answer from what I'm hearing you, because I want to get off of the election stuff, is they've institutionalized the cheating in every possible way that they can, so that they can continue to cheat and continue to install people. The point I was trying to get to, which we got to and then got sidetracked, was we think we all agree that there's going to be some kind of domestic violence here, domestic chaos, or conflict here on American soil before the election. And it sounds to me like, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds to me like you think that there's going to be some states that are declared unable to do the election, like in 1864, and they're going to use the legislatures to install whoever the nominee is so that they can certify the election. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, in the scenario that I put together a few weeks ago about a potential black swan related to my prediction of violence, would look like there's cartels unleashed in Philly, Detroit, Milwaukee, Vegas, or Atlanta. And then here comes this lopsided win for Trump, 10 plus points in all these states. And the House moves to try to make an election within the House of Representatives to throw out the vote based on an unfair representation of the election. So that would just be an idea that I've got. I believe that they have to have some semblance of an election based on lack of precedent for any other case. But then again, the unprecedented happens all the time.
Hey, I'm just you guys are curious. I'm getting ready for my medical mission, and Wyatt and I are filling up the water in the ice right now. So forgive me for being disruptive. I'll go off camera. Nobody cares about all of this administrative crap.
I've got to bounce, you guys. So hit me if you need anything.
Hey, thanks, Cam Keschel. Appreciate you jumping on, man.
Thanks, Carl. Yep. All right.
Thanks, so I've got two quick things here. One to what Matt was talking about. He's incredibly spot on with the whole full spectrum attack thing. I participated in some area assessments, and in the soft world, the area assessments, you go into a country or a city or your box, your AO, wherever you're working, and you go through every single layer of vulnerabilities. The electrical system, the water system, the beans and bullets, where are those depot? Where are the railheads? Where do the rails cross? What are the big freeways? The list goes on and on and on. You get the point. But when SOFT does an area assessment like that, they're racking up potential targets. Now, if anybody thinks that China and Iran and Russia and a whole bunch of other countries haven't done that to the United States, you're completely out of your gourd.
Decades.
Okay, they have decades worth of, exactly, Matt, they've got decades worth of area assessments on us. So they could easily just go through here and there and pick little nice targets that just slow things down and make everybody incredibly paranoid and create that state that you were talking about where nobody will go outside, sort of like a COVID warfare, almost sort of thing. But that is absolutely a thing. Area assessments have been going on for decades.
I think that you can have waves that are flowing over each other yes. waves because China may not want to be directly blamed. So
yes,
let's say China at the highest level, China does not say, let's unleash the maximum cyber attack to like shut down Amazon Web Services and just paralyze the American government.
Exactly. Yeah, because we have more than one adversary here.
Right. And each, but all of these adversaries have a common hatred for the great Satan.
Yes. You know,
China's goes back to the, at least to the Opium War, where they consider America to be Great Britain 2.0. So we were not like huge in gunboat diplomacy, but we were part of it at the end.
You know, China's become very hegemonic though now. They really want land and resources too. But, so that's an additional aspect of what you're talking
about. But in terms of propagandizing their people to hate us, they have a lot to work with.
Yes.
Another Charlton Heston movie, it's like 100 Days in Peking, you know, the box.
I'm sensing a pattern, Matt.
Yeah. So they are brainwashing their people to the extent that they're now flowing the brainwashing into America. I learned this from Michael Young. They're all over the Americas teaching Indians that you're really Chinese. You came across the land bridge. You're our long lost cousins till those Anglo gringo, you know, conquistadors showed up to oppress and enslave you. And so China is at one level. You've got people from Hezbollah. You've got free agents that are just like, you know, that have been run out of many Islamic countries that don't have a tolerance for jihad terrorists. That there are a lot of groups that aren't just like these 100 people are waiting for a code word from their capital. They're going to see things happen and they're going to say, I have been on my own out scouting for targets, waiting for the right moment. And the right moment will be when other things begin to be attacked in America. So it may be the 100 Hezbollah kick things off, but the 10,000 Hezbollah, I'm just using that term loosely, the 10,000 jihad brothers that are just sort of like waiting for the signal from on high are going to say, now is my time. And on my own, I have identified targets in my zip code. And I'm just going to go out and monkey wrench those targets now to compound the effect against the great Satan. I wasn't willing to just go out and, you know, do a suicide run to do a train derailing, right? I've got a wife, I've got kids in school, I've got a life here. But when there's a quickening happening and there are these events happening across America, I think a lot of these people are going to say, this is my calling from on high to go out and do my one train derailing. And that will be, that could be multiplied by thousands.
Yeah. It's a little deeper than that, though.
Yeah. Cause I think what you're talking about three different lines of operations here, right? So you're talking about the coordinated attack. Then you're talking about the people that go off the reservation. And then you're talking about, you know, religious dogma, for lack of a better word, that drives people. I think all of those will happen all at the same time. I don't think it's just like you said, full spectrum, right?
And another aspect of this that can't be discounted is the backlash by normie Americans when it turns out that a significant percentage of these people that are conducting these attacks were allowed into the country over the last 4 years with no vetting. You know, they throw away their passports at the border. They come in and they say, my name is Muhammad the Third. And the Border Patrol says, here's your EBT card. Here's your bus ticket. Where do you want to go? And when some of these attacks are attributed to an open border, there's going to be a huge backlash against Biden and the Democrats.
Yeah, thousands of passports.
A big backlash.
Matt, to your propaganda point there, when we were working the 2020 elections in the aftermath, I was part of General Flynn's security detail. I was running the intelligence part. We found tons of blatant Chi-Com propaganda coming out of the university groups, the kids that were in the Antifa groups. We also discovered how Antifa was operating there, working off of a decentralized Viet Cong style command, where nobody knows anybody more than one or two ranks above them. And they keep it separated. That's why they're so hard to catch up with. Yeah. But the Chi-Com propaganda coming out of there was just so blatantly obvious. I have a whole folder full of it that I collected. It's from all over the country, and you can tell it all emanates from a single source. It's stuff from Atlanta, St. Louis, Chicago, Miami, New York, Washington, Maryland, all of those areas, all of these different Antifa groups, and the propaganda is all almost identical.
Well, it's all coming out of China. That's why it's all coordinated through the NGOs and the Chinese assets on the ground here. I mean, it's no coincidence that they're involved in education, they're involved in the university system, they're involved in state government, city government. I mean, what's a New York mayor? I mean, literally not even 2 weeks ago, he was at a pro-CCP dinner in D.C. or in New York. So they've infiltrated every part, and it doesn't surprise me that there's a coordinated effort across the country to spread the same propaganda.
And our immune system has been turned off and redirected because
completely compromised.
FBI is looking for the Christian nationalists, not, you know, hundreds of Chinese agents, saboteurs coming across the border every day. You know, a week into the country and they're getting a concealed permit and learning to shoot the AR-15.
And voter registration.
And they're looking at registration. Nationalists.
I've seen them at ranges here in Michigan.
You don't need to be a great shooter if your whole job is going to be, when the night comes, you're going to get in the van and you're just going to walk into a building and shoot people at point blank. You know, that you don't need to be a great shooter to do that. You just know how to pull the trigger, put a magazine in, pull the trigger. But I don't see that coming from China right off the bat. I mean, but it's another aspect of full spectrum, another angle. I'm sure China full warfare, the
total war.
They'll have a plan for if we have to tonight, we shut down America's grid, and it doesn't matter if we're arrested in the process. That's a plan at one level, you know. A total cyber plan where only a few percent of the Chinese agents will even know this is going on. But meanwhile, they're just flooding people into the country. And the Chinese are on the same bus with the Hezbollah.
That's absolutely true. Our greater border
patrol are handing them all bus tickets and plane tickets.
Gentlemen, I got something I got to do. I got to bounce, but thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
Yep. So one last topic before we wrap this up. The question I have is, it's not a question I have, but the question I keep getting is, do we anticipate that all of these attacks will happen at the same time? And my answer is yes. Especially attacks here on the domestic side of the house.
I'm still waiting to see what the bomb damage assessment from Israel is. I haven't heard about any of these drones yet.
Hey, Steve, could I add a couple point thoughts?
Yeah, go ahead.
man, just awesome discussion so far. I'm at the beach here in Hawaii, so it's kind of been distracting. But a couple of things that occurred to me listening to the thoughts about the drones and everything that I thought is, based on what Matt was saying there, I see the real potential that, you know, we could see the war evolve if it gets going into a situation where basically, you know, modern aircraft almost become obsolete and drones, basically you almost, I've even seen a DOD discussion of going after like P-51 type airplanes to go after the drones because, like, you know, Israeli F-15s are basically useless against these drones that are so slow. They're going totally outside the paradigm that the modern air defense system was built around. And so that's one thing I think, you know, you could end up seeing like manned aerial combat evolving backwards to be anti-drone.
We'll go back to flak. We'll go back to altitude triggered flak.
Yeah, that or balloons, dirigibles, all that stuff. Like World War One, basically like a World War I air.
But the World War I era stuff was very random in its circular error probability. If you have a $50,000 drone with a chip that can recognize an F-35 and it's going to loiter around your airfield, and then the $50,000 drone takes out a $50 million F-35.
Exactly. Totally.
And form of them, and we have nothing that we can put up, and they can be redirected with a burst transmission from fly to over the American airbase and go random for 2 hours. We saw this is happening in Ukraine. Fly towards Kiev or Kharkov and fly randomly, trying to soak up $1 million Patriot missiles, and then with a burst transmission, they all go to a new time on target.
Sure, yeah, totally. The other thing, a buddy of mine offline was, asked me to bring up, he feels like, you know, we should be focusing on who's the real, you know, guiding force behind all this. And, you know, like Michael Giannis pointed out, you've got Hayes bringing in all the, Muslim, immigrants and, you know, that's all being orchestrated by the Zionists, you know, and it's like here, the Zionists are trying to get us in a war in World War III with Iran. And I saw, Matt, the article you shared and others shared yesterday on Gab, the Will Schreier discussion about the Russia-Iranian-China alliance. And I totally see that. I totally see us being set up for a big fall out of this.
It's a big Pericles trap. You know, the declining empire lashing out in its death throes. And there are some things that are just like, very, you know, I'm one of the only people that is like picking up on this, but Russia has an Arctic route now. So to go from, you know, the Russian east to the Russian west, they can do that.
Right.
They can do that year round. They are building nuclear icebreakers wide enough that any ships can just follow them. So they're nuclear, so they don't run out of fuel, obviously. But it's a huge shortcut compared to the Suez route, and the Suez route is a peacetime route. So the Suez route, it only works in a time of everybody's happy. Otherwise, America, to get cargo from, you know, America to Asia, will have to go around all the way around Africa, which is like a much longer ride than going from Shanghai to Belgium over top of the Arctic, of Russian Arctic route. But the Russian Arctic route goes through three different Russian territorial islands. So only friends of Russia will be able to use that. Well, what's above Shanghai? Japan and Korea.
Right. So
Japan and Korea are going to be saying, well, we need to use that route to get to our European markets. We don't want to piss off Russia. I'm not saying like that absolutely guarantees this or that or the anything. I'm just saying the tilt, the osmotic tilt goes towards be friends with Russia. They've got the resources. They've got a quicker route to Europe. Piss off Russia. Stay with America, the declining hegemon with the failed currency. You know, Argentina with nukes, the former world currency, but no longer. And if you stay with America, you've got to take your ship all the way around Africa. I mean,
right.
A lot of osmotic
gravity tilts that are not going our way right now.
You can it just means they're going to follow the money, Matt, and that's spot on. They will, right? Because if you look at let's look at this from an economic standpoint. If you look at this just from an economic standpoint, the situation at hand, they already know the die is cast. So they're going to hedge their bets in the direction where it's not going to have a massive financial impact on their country, because they can see the handwriting on the wall long before, you know, along with the rest of us, right? So I think that's absolutely spot on.
The one thing I think Matt makes a good point that I was thinking about is what becomes the scope of this Iran-Israel conflict? If it's just to manipulate our elections and to control events in the U.S., I kind of think it may, we may see like the widespread October 7th kind of situation that they can use to bring in martial law kind of scenarios in the U.S. Or if it gets to a wider war, more like a World War III kind of thing or something closer to that, you know, then I think it starts getting to be a much greater systemic system problem worldwide.
Everybody always tends to look at a conflict through their own short-range prism.
Right.
Like, how will this affect our election? This could be 90% internal Iranian politics. 10%, who gives a damn? Oh, there's an American election? Who knew?
Right.
I don't know this, I'm just hypothesizing. Internal Iranian politics may be so powerful right now, you better hit Israel or we're just overthrowing you. You got to hit Israel. You got to show us something. They killed our great generals, our heroes, in a diplomatic mission, right? I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just saying, look at it through your enemy's prism.
Well, here's a question. Has anybody seen... a thought occurred to me is what the Chinese and Russian reaction has been today since the Iranian attacks on Israel. Because I think that's going to really point the way.
Too early. It's too early to tell. We'll find out tomorrow.
It's been very clear that they're not calling it an alliance, but they're calling it a partnership. And that Will Schreiber, I'm a Tetronic column, very important, you know, very, very key, that they all understand that the three of them, that you call it an axis or partnership, the three of them, we can't even mount up for one Desert Storm level war.
And right.
We had 6 months to just move ships across oceans with nobody hassling us. You know, Port of Jubail, here comes another ship every day for 6 months. That will never happen again. If we tried to go against the Russians in the Middle East, our troop ships will never make it. Our airplanes will never make it. You know, we're not fighting the second or third tier anymore. And we now have three countries that are that understand that they're going to stand with each other. So if we move strongly against Iran, I expect the Chinese to move their amphibious landing craft up to like attack Taiwan position. Not that they are going to do it the next week, but just to pull our Navy back to the Pacific. Same thing with the Russians. The Russians will go right through Belarusia and mass on the border of the Baltics so that we have to divert forces away from Iran. I mean, that's how I look at it.
No, I think you're spot on. We're going to see, we've been saying this all along, right? We're going to see multiple lines of operation culminate at the same time. I agree with that. I think we're also going to see not just foreign escalation in multiple theaters. I think we're going to see it here domestically all at the same time, as well as kickoff in some kind of kinetic with Taiwan, right?
And as has been pointed out, the FBI, they almost never give like a time window, like expect an attack in 48 hours. They're only doing that as CYA, cover your ass. Christopher Wray is as much of a sellout as the rest of those traitors, but he doesn't want to go down in history as the guy that totally got blindsided by 9/11, you know, second version, or 10
Pearl Harbor.
Or Pearl Harbors. He doesn't want to go down as the fool who didn't even know it was going to happen. So he's torn between I support the Democrats and lawfare and Biden and all of that, but I don't want to go down in history as the fool without a clue. That's why they're putting out things specifically like a 48-hour warning for a major terror attack. They never do that. That's a CYA move.
It's CYA, and it gives them air cover to do stuff as well internally. My honest opinion is, it Washington is working with Iran, deciding when the best time for them to attack, probably working with Israel all at the same time. Why? Because they all need a wider war, and so does Europe.
But I don't think Iran needs or wants a wider war right now.
I think Iran has just as much domestic issues as we do.
Where does the WEF fit in this, the World Economic Forum? Because I see that them being possibly the primary instigators. Yeah,
more chaos. Right. Just bring it all down.
Well, but expect them to release some kind of a fucking pathogen right in the middle of this. That's where they fit in.
And picture, let's just hypothesize a couple of October 7 level attacks inside of CONUS in the next 24, 36 hours. There's going to be a revote on this Fourth Amendment FISA thing. Apparently, some parliamentary procedure's been, what's her name, Luna, the anti-commie Florida representative, Andrea, anyway, she has figured out some parliamentary maneuver where they're going to have to do a revote on Monday on this complete rhino sellout on FISA. Let's say right before that, there's this big October 7th attack. It's going to be a huge clash. The Republican conservatives will be saying, it's because you traitor Democrats had a wide open border and you let all these terrorists in. And the Democrats will be saying, and the rhinos will be saying, it's because you handcuffed the FBI and you didn't let them spy on these terrorists in our country. So that's going to be like two huge waves crossing each other. You know, the we need more surveillance of Americans to stop the terrorism.
Absolutely.
Close the border to stop the terrorism. Too big.
You know, right. if we would have had warrantless FISA ability to spy on people, we would have caught all those networks. Yeah, I can hear that bullshit already.
Right. How about close the border? It's in the Constitution.
No, it's a Democrat problem. Remember, Mike Johnson said it last night in front of Trump. It's a Democrat problem. It's not us.
Do you know what's in the Constitution? The militia. You know what's not in the Constitution? The DOJ, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, the DHS. Not in the Constitution. Exactly. Created by Congress. But now Congress is the little poodle on a leash bit of deep state. So the deep state goes to Congress and says, you've got to give us this price of unlimited surveillance. Otherwise, terrorism is going to happen. And all of these congressmen just roll over on their back, show their belly.
That's because they're all compromised. We already know that. So, yeah. All right. Yeah. I think it's a good point to wrap up. Let's do some closing comments. Let's start with you, Colonel Johnson.
I don't really have a whole lot. I think, like you've said already, the next few days are going to tell us a lot. And I'm going to try to follow up on whatever I see the Russians and the Chinese statements are going to be here soon. That's my focus.
True.
Well, you see that I'm getting cooled off with ice cream. Mr. Wyatt is going to graduate EMT school in about a week. Very proud of him.
Is that chocolate?
The
chocolate mint chip.
That's chocolate mint and pistachio. Nothing will get a man ready for war like good ice cream cone. So if you've looked at Bitcoin, it's taken a nosedive right now. I'm sure there'll be a correction, but I thought that was interesting. I didn't expect to see that. Thank you. I forget who in the chat brought that up. This is the time to get your water filled up. Let this spur your horse a little bit. I'm with Brack, and anybody who truly hates you is not going to inflict indiscriminate violence on you. It's always going to be for a purpose. It's all those other free radicals that have come across the border that, you know, might do stupid shit if they think that our resources are overwhelmed or they're working other issues. So just be aware of that. I would say, you know, like I'm packing my AR-15 now in my vehicle. I don't normally do that. I think that you should increase your level of awareness, but not be paranoid. But definitely get your water topped off. Stop fucking around on that. That's all I have, Colonel.
Matt?
Yeah, let's keep this channel, like, let's keep an eye on this channel so that if something kinetic happens, we can get back together. And I'll keep an eye on, you know, the common frequency.
Check. So my last comments for the audience is be situationally aware of what's going on around you. Pay attention to your surroundings, pay attention to who's there, and don't take anything for granted, especially now. So consider this the event that's starting it all off and start to make decisions based off that. If something major changes, we'll be back with another roundtable. Until then, God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Hurrah. One team, one fight.